Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry pits four experts against the toughest questions the American public can send in to us. Here's how it goes. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was received first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please is presented to you every week entirely without benefit of preparation or rehearsal, a perfectly informal and spontaneous show. The authorities who will do their best for us tonight include the pianist, author, and composer, Oscar Levant, the sports expert and memory wizard, John Kieran, the author and conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, Franklin P. Adams, and as our guest, the dramatic critic of the New York Post, whose most recent book is Broadway in Review, and who is also widely known as a lecturer, Mr. John Mason Brown. Remember, listeners, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, before we start, we want to answer a great many letters which we received after the broadcast of October 8th, in which Miss Jan Struther participated. Some of you may remember that on that program we asked this question. According to a famous quotation, what is, quote, better than rubies, close quote? Miss Struther answered, a virtuous woman. And, of course, she's entitled to her opinion. But we didn't accept her reply as correct. We had asked for the answer as quoted exactly in Proverbs 8, section 11, which reads, for wisdom is better than rubies. Wisdom is the only correct answer if you stick to the literal words of the Bible. We thank all our correspondents for coming to Miss Struther's defense, but we feel that Information Please should be and will remain rigorous. And now shall we start our little program this evening with a question coming to us from Fairmont, West Virginia, thought up by Miss Elizabeth Lee. Get 3 out of 4 on this, gentlemen. Each of the words or phrases that I'm now going to quote is the answer to a question asked in literature or in life. Quote the questions that precede them. The first answer is, I do. Question. I have one hand, I have two hands. Mr. Levant.
You take this to be your
It's awfully hard.
Lawfully or lawful, what is it, wedded something?
Yes, I wonder how you ever got married, Mr. Levant. There's so much difficulty in pronouncing the question. Do you do you take this woman?
Why woman?
Well, in your case, it would be a woman.
All right.
For your lawful wife, and you say, Mr. Levant?
I do.
I do, right, belligerently. Well, Mr. Adams, did you have the same idea?
The same idea.
All right.
Although I would have said, do you take this man?
You would have said, if you were the preacher?
Yes.
Yes, yes, that's right. Now, how about this is another answer. Give me the question. Quote, this is he that every man in arms should wish to be. Close quote. Mr. Kieran.
The happy warrior.
What is the question?
The question in who is the happy warrior? Who is he that every man in arms should wish to be?
Yes. And you're quoting from what poem, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I think it's Wordsworth.
Yes, it's Wordsworth, character of the happy warrior. I think the phrase was made popular a couple of years ago when it was applied to whom? Mr. Adams.
To Al Smith by President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Yes, I believe that was the case. Now, the third answer, down in the cellar eating sauerkraut. What's the question? Mr. Brown, was that your hand?
Oh, no.
No, that wasn't Mr. Brown's hand. Mr. Kieran.
Where was Moses when the light went out?
Mr. Brown just came in on the Moses end of it. And that was by Wordsworth, Mr. Kieran?
No, I don't think so.
I think it was Anon.
You don't know who wrote it?
Anon.
Anon. Do you think it was Anon, Mr.
Anon?
Anon. You're the old authority on Anon. That gives us 3 questions and answers. Now, the final answer is simply the word I, the perpendicular pronoun, I. Mr. Levant.
Any columnist.
That's true enough generally, but a specific question to which the answer is aye. Mr. Adams.
Who saw him die?
Yes, or any of the questions in that poem, which is about
who
what?
Killed Cock Robin?
Yes, who killed Cock Robin? Aye. That gives us 4 out of 4. Mr. Brown, did you have a...
Yes.
I said the sparrow with my hook and ladder.
Yes, rhymes, too. The next question comes from Louise Svijensky of this city. Get 3 out of 4 if you can. Identify the play or movie from which each of these closing speeches is taken. This is not easy. I'm just going to give you the last words of each play or movie. Here's the first. How long, O Lord? How long? Mr. Brown.
I think it's St. Joan.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Brown. That was the only hand raised. St. Joan by George Bernard Shaw. And who speaks the words?
It's in the epilogue. St. Joan, after she's canonized.
That's exactly right. Now, the second closing phrase. He goes to his death. Send after him. He goes to his death. Send after him. Very famous curtain speech. Mr. Adams, any idea?
I don't know.
Mr.
Sounds
Brown?
Like Maxwell Anderson.
Do you want to be more precise, Mr. Brown?
It's Winterset.
No.
No,
it's Maxwell Anderson, all right. You're quite right, Mr. Adams. Mr.
No.
Brown?
No, I don't know.
No?
Key Largo.
I beg pardon?
Key Largo.
Well, you've only got 8 more to name. Mr.
Valley.
Mr. Levant?
Elizabeth, Valley Forge, Mary Queen of Scots.
Oh, it's Elizabeth the Queen.
Yes, Mr. Levant named 3 or 4 of it. I think I really shouldn't give any
credit. I gave you an anthology.
I can't give you credit. Elizabeth the Queen, and the words are spoken by whom?
Elizabeth herself.
No, they're spoken by one of her, I believe they're known as handmaidens or tire women or something like that. Penelope Gray.
Penelope.
Yes, Penny for short. Now, that gives us one wrong. We have to get the next 2 right. Quote, I'm suing you for $350,000. Close quote. I'm suing you for $350,000. Well, I may be out a few thousand. But that's the approximate wording, and it closes what play? I know that you've all seen it.
Sounds like room service.
No, it isn't, though, Mr. Levant. Mr. Brown?
It's The Man Who Came to Dinner.
You better be.
Oh, yeah.
Who says the words?
Sharon Whiteside.
Sharon Whiteside. That's right, Mr. Brown. Now, the final. Here are the final words of another play or movie. Quote, Hello, America. Hang on to your lights. They're the only lights left in the world. Mr. Levant.
That's in the picture. Foreign correspondent.
You bet. That's right. Who says the words in the picture?
Ben Heck wrote them.
Yeah, and who says the words? Don't have to answer.
I know him very well. Why doesn't he call me up, incidentally? What's his name?
There's a little time on this show.
Huh?
But if Joe McRae is listening in, will you please send in a call to Mr. Levant, who needs
McRae,
the call?
McRae,
Joe McRae. Yes. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4 and sends us on to a question from Mrs. Francis. No, I don't. Let's see. Were we stumped on that? That's right. We were stumped on that. I beg your pardon. That sends $10 to Mrs. Vachensky and a set of the encyclopedia, courtesy of Canada Dry. The next question comes from Mrs. Frances E. Dion of Hartford, Connecticut. Get 3 out of 4 on this. This should test the oft-boasted, vaunted, I may say, knowledge of crossword puzzles of Mr. Franklin P. Adams. Now, I'm going to give you the definitions of some 3-letter words that occur hundreds of times in crossword puzzles. What are the words? There are 4 of them. Get 3 out of 4. The first is simply a Japanese sash. Mr. Adams.
O-B-I.
That a boy, Mr. Adams. That a B. O-B. O-B is right. Very good. River island. A river island. An island in a river, I assume that means. It's a 3-letter word, Mr. Adams.
That is either A-I-T.
Stop. You're right. It's A-I-T.
I never heard of those words elsewhere.
No, I've never heard of them either. A weight of India, W-E-I-G-H-T. 3-letter word meaning a weight of India. Indian weight. Don't any of you other gentlemen care?
I usually have to work that the other way.
Horizontally?
It comes out that way. But it may be S-E-R.
S-E-R is right. It's a ser. Pretty brilliant performance, Mr. Adams.
It's the long ones that are tough.
How heavy is this Indian way? Of course, at this point, you just don't know anything, do you, Mr. Adams?
That I don't have
no,
to know.
You don't care. It's 8 ounces to 3 pounds. I don't see how it can vary that way, but apparently it does. Finally, a ritual cup. Ritual cup. 3-letter ritual cup. Have I stumped you, Mr. Adams? I hope you meet it on your next crossword puzzle.
I don't know. It couldn't be M-U-G.
I don't see why not. A christening mug, possibly?
Is that right?
No, but I'll accept it. I think it's very good.
What is it, really?
A-M-A. You see, you get two vowels there, an AMA. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, with the 3 other gentlemen resting on their not-yet-earned laurels. The next question, Mr. Brown, you'll be happy to know, comes from a colleague of yours, Mr. Richard Watts, Jr., of this city. And I believe he has probably directed it specifically at you. We're going to have some songs played, one at a time, 4 of them. In what shows were these songs first heard? In what shows were the songs first heard? Let's have the first. How about that? Do you recognize the song, any of you?
I recognize the tone, but I don't know what it is.
Well, now, I wonder whether Mr. Brown saw this show, as a matter of fact. I don't know how far back it... How far back do you go, Mr. Brown?
Oh, a long, long
way. A long way.
Rip Van Winkle.
You don't look it or sound it. The song, Mr. Levant, is what?
I don't know the name.
The Irish Have a Great Day Tonight.
Oh, that question came from Mr. Watts, all right.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. A plug for good old Aaron. And who wrote the show and what was the name of the show?
It sounds like Mr. No.
Oh, were you going to say Mr. Brown?
I was, but I think it's wrong.
Yes.
What did you say the title is?
The title of the song is The Irish Have a Great
sounds
Day.
Sounds like George
tonight.
M. Cohan.
No.
But is it Harrigan and Hart?
A beg pardon?
Harrigan and Hart.
No, it's a Victor Herbert show, Eileen.
Eileen.
I don't know, how far back does that go, Mr. Adams?
About 1915.
Would that be pre-Brown? Do you suppose?
No, oh, no, it's post-Brown.
Post-Brown. Well, that gives
I
us one
Brown
wrong.
Was in rompers in those days.
No.
How about the next? All right.
No.
Don't know that one, Mr. Levant?
It's going to be a great day.
Yes. What's the name of the show?
It's in Newman's called Great Day.
Sure, that's right. And the third. Listen to this, Mr. Levant. I have 2 hands. Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams. I'll try Mr. Adams.
That is from a Wodehouse and Kern show.
Correct.
Mr. Levant says correct, and he means it.
Based on the College Widow.
And what was the name of the show? Do you know, Mr. Levant?
He doesn't even know the name of the song. The name of the song is the Siren Song.
Yeah. Siren Song. It
wonderful
Lady
song.
Be Good.
No, that was by Gershwin.
What were you going to say, Mr. Levant?
Well, I thought Mr. Adams will help me out. Now, it's a Siren Song by Kern.
That's right. What's the name of the show?
Well, that's really before my time. What's your suggestion?
I don't know how far back
that
this
was
goes.
During the leave war it, in about 1917 or
leave 18. It to Jane is the answer, Mr. Adams. Is that about the time
that's
of the
war? That's the College Widow, yes.
Well, that gives us only half credit on that, I'm
a wonderful
afraid.
Song, though.
A good song. Wish wonderful. We had time to listen to it. Let's have the fourth and last. I've got 1 hand. Mr. Levant.
That's the riff song from the Desert Song. It's also used, I think, by the Army football team.
That's right. You know it 2 ways.
Well, they've not done well with that song.
You're all right. The Desert Song by Sigmund Romberg. Mr. Brown, you contemn musical comedies?
I go there with my ears, but they stay closed.
Listen, I may
but
be wrong
besides,
about the Army.
How about Watts getting
about
$10?
About the Army?
Yeah.
That's the worst part of it.
They don't use that song.
They don't?
No.
Well, we'll let the Desert Song be our answer. That does not give us a complete 3 out of 4, I'm afraid, but sends $10 to Mr. Watts and a set of the encyclopedia, and you're
right. He needs
right.
that.
You think he does need one?
Yeah.
J. Cohen of Brookline, Massachusetts, sends this one in. Now, this is a classical question. It's about some famous pieces of sculpture that we've all seen. On what hand does the thinker rest his head? There are 2 hands, gentlemen, right and left. Choose 1 out of 2. On what hand does the thinker, Rodin's famous statue, rest his hand, his head, I beg your pardon, Mr. Levant?
He uses his right hand.
To do what?
Well, he never did anything else but just rest it.
Just rest his head on the right. That's correct. Now, one arm of the Venus de Milo is broken at the shoulder, while the other is broken at the elbow. Which is broken off at the shoulder? Mr. Brown.
It's the right.
Ah, too bad. It's the left. Still, it was a fair guess. Yeah. It's the left. There's a very, very famous gag of Noel Coward's about the Venus de Milo. Do you remember it, about how she got that way, Mr. Brown?
I remember one gag about the Venus de Milo, the Chesterton description of Shaw.
He was just like the Venus de Milo. All that there was of him was perfect.
I was thinking of the postcard that Noel Coward wrote to a little girl, sending her a picture of the Venus de Milo and saying, "This is what happens if you bite your nails." gets us wrong. Have to get the next one right. What is the Winged Victory, the famous Nike of Samothrace, standing on? What is the Winged Victory standing on, Mr. Brown?
It's the prow of the ship.
That's quite right, Mr. Brown. That gives us 2 out of 3 and sends us on to the question coming to us from C. Hopkins of Atlanta, Georgia. Get 2 out of 3 on this. Can you name an American who has written dramatic criticism within the last 10 years? That might be hard already. Name an American who has written dramatic criticism in the last 10 years and who, A, became an actor. Mr. Brown.
Wolcott.
Wolcott, yes. Can you name the plays?
Well, he was in Brief Moment.
That's quite right.
He has appeared in The Road Company, The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Very good.
He was in one other...
Wine of Choice.
Wine of Choice.
Very good. Mr. Behrman's play.
Mr. Benchley also
Mr. Benchley, yes, has appeared in a great many movies, and Foreign Correspondent was one of them.
He was also in a show, Music Box Review, but in Berlin.
Now, how about an American who has written dramatic criticism within the last decade and who wrote an unsuccessful play? An unsuccessful play. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Gilbert Gabriel wrote a play that didn't come in once.
Well, that wouldn't make
sense. I call that, yes. It was tried out of town, but didn't come in.
You can't
I hate to
tell
say it was unsuccessful. Mr. John Anderson has adapted two plays, Gogol's The Inspector General, and he did a fairly successful adaptation of The Fatal Alibi, and he did also an adaptation of an awful play. Forgotten the name of it, ran for 4 nights at the Gaiety Theater and closed promptly.
What a chance for you to talk about your colleagues.
It's wonderful. Can't you ask any questions about Richard Watts?
I don't think we've got one. Mr. Levant, do you want to add to Mr. Brown's excellence?
Yeah, well, Mr. Wolcott collaborated on 2 plays that weren't failures or successes. They had that old neutral feeling. Mid-channel.
Channel Road.
Channel Road. Don't bother me, Mr. Channel Road. Control yourselves.
And the other one was The Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower. That's right. Now, gentlemen, an American who has written dramatic criticism within the last 10 years and who wrote a successful play. A successful play. Mr. Brown.
Mr. George S. Kaufman, who used to be on the Times drama department as second string critic on the Times, has written a great many.
Was he a critic?
He did, I beg your pardon. He was the second string critic on the Times and used to review even Walter Hamden.
Mm-hmm. Is that about as far down as you go?
No. I respect Mr. Hamden greatly.
Thought I'd catch you there, Mr. Brown.
No.
Well, I'm informed that Mr. Kaufman, though he was an editor, was not a dramatic critic.
He was a second string critic on the Times. I have been at the theater when he was doing it. I'm an eyewitness.
You sound awfully positive, Mr. Brown.
I swear.
You saw him criticizing plays?
No, but I know he did it.
He used to write his plays in the theater, as a matter of fact, when he was doing that.
All right, I'll accept it. The answer that I have down here is that there is no American who wrote dramatic criticism in the last 10 years and wrote a successful play.
There was no first-string critic. But yes, there was.
Mr. Levant?
He was a guest here in the Morning World, Cynthian Irvin, the first Mrs.
He wasn't American, though.
He was working here. He got paid.
Yes, but he was an Irishman. He was an Anglo-Irishman. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, let's see. Up to this point, exactly $20 have gone out to the askers of questions which our experts could not answer. And now a brief Canada Dry memorandum from Mr. Cross.
For the past 2 years, we've been opening our program with these words. Information, please, presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. And then we've heard the rooster crowing proudly, because in Canada Dry Beverages, he's really had something fine to crow about. In fact, we're all pretty proud of our family of Canada Dry flavored beverages. There are lots of them, you know, and doubtless you already have a favorite among the large assortment. And certainly you've noticed that every bottle bears the familiar Canada Dry label, visible assurance that the beverage inside this bottle has been prepared with the same care and thoroughness with which Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water are made. It's this diligence, this extra care, that's made the Canada Dry label a symbol of excellence. And that's why today, more people than ever before are saying, make mine Canada Dry.
And, Mr. Cross, my stopwatch is saying 54 seconds. And that sends us on to the second half of the program with a question from H.W. Stahlberg of Philadelphia. Listen carefully, gentlemen. Mercury, the god of business, finding things dull, has opened a hat store on the road between Mount Olympus and the River Styx. On the opening day, he gets the following customers, each of whom buys as many hats as he needs. Cerberus, Hydra, Janus. How many hats does Mercury sell? Now, take it easy, gentlemen. Don't leap to any conclusions. How many hats does Mercury sell? Cerberus, Hydra, Janus. Mr. Kieran.
Well, I think it would be pretty hard to fit a Hydra. Of course, Cerberus had three heads and Janus had two heads. But
I want the sum.
Hmm?
I want the sum. How many hats in all?
Well, as fast as you cut off one of the Hydra's heads, two grew on.
Suppose you didn't do any cutting.
That would be six.
I beg pardon?
Then it would be six.
Now, I want the answer from Mr. Kieran who started it, and if he's wrong, we're going to lose $10, Mr. Stahlberg. Give us an answer, Mr. Kieran. Total number of hats sold?
I can't do it.
He met the Hydra in good condition. Mr. Levant.
Six.
I want to know the total number of hats sold, Mr. Levant. Total number of hats
sold. What do you think I do when I say six?
All right, you figure it out for us. How do you dope it out?
Mr. Kieran figured it out. Five, and you said Hydra, who's supposed to have been many-headed.
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to bother about that. You said he was in condition, so he has one head.
Oh, no. Hydra, when he was in condition, had nine heads. He was the Herculean monster with nine heads.
14.
Cerberus had three heads, and Janus had two, which would make 14. That's right. That sends $10.
Did Janus have two heads or two faces?
He had, according to some reports, two faces and one head.
Was that in...
And according to other reports, two heads. So the answer could be 13 or 14.
But the on D in my book was that he had one head and two faces.
One head, yes, but you didn't give us the answer anyway, Mr.
No,
Brown.
I didn't know it.
This is too late to correct us. That sends us out of the encyclopedia, courtesy of Canada Dry to Mr. Stahlberg. Do what you can with this one. This is from Alexander Block of Hillsdale, New York. It's a musical question. Pardon me, musical question. Four famous composers have made use of an almost identical three-note motif as an opening in four famous compositions. Now, we're going to play the openings one at a time. Identify each composition, name each composer. I haven't the slightest idea how this is to be done. Well, let's have the first. Mr. Levant?
It's a little too slow. It's the César Franck, D minor symphony.
The César
Franck,
D minor. That's much faster. Let's have the second. That's correct. Very well done. Mr. Levant?
I think that's the Preludes of Liszt.
That's right. Sounds very much like the other to me. Le Prelude of Liszt. That's quite right, Mr. Levant. You're batting these off beautifully. The third? Now it's about time for everybody to get thoroughly balled up.
Well,
any guesses?
Not unless you play the whole piece.
Do you want another note or two?
A couple bars.
Have a note or two.
See?
Got it now?
Well, I know it's much more familiar, but I'm not going to go through everything in retrospect.
How about it? I'd love you to name the composition.
I'd love you to.
All right, I'll do it. Getting kind of affectionate this evening. It's the Overture to Der Freischütz of von Weber. Remember it now? That gives us one wrong. Let's have the next and last.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Know that?
Yes.
Levant?
Yep.
Let's have it.
That's by Wagner.
Yes?
I think it's the opening, just before the opening of the funeral march in, of Siegfried's funeral march in Götterdämmerung.
That's absolutely right. That gives us 3 out of 4. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant. I think that's pretty good going. The next question comes from E.N. LeClaire of Boston. Quote, the next line that rhymes with each of these. Get 3 out of 4. Woodman, spare that tree. The next rhyming line. Mr. Adams.
In youth it sheltered me.
In youth it sheltered me. How does it go on, Mr. Adams?
And I'll protect it now.
Very prettily done. The second. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. Mr. Adams?
About the square of the hypotenuse.
That's roughly it. Mr. Brown, you seem to have
a... Mine would have been rougher.
I'm not so sure. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse, it's from what opera, Mr. Adams?
Pirates of Penzance.
Pirates of Penzance, yes, the song of the Major General. Now, the third line that I want you to give me the rhyming line to is, don't take it serious. Don't take it serious, Mr. Brown.
It's so mysterious.
Yes.
Life is but... That's a bowl of cherries.
Very good, Mr. Brown. That's
See,
right.
I do know music.
Oh, yes, you do. Very high grade.
High
too.
Grade.
Very
yes.
high. The rhyming line to the captains and the kings depart. The captains and the kings depart. Mr. Kieran.
an humble and a contrite heart.
Yes, can you give us the whole stanza, Mr.
Still stands that ancient sacrifice, an humble and a contrite heart.
Who wrote it?
Kipling's Recessional.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. Thank you very much. That's a perfect score on that. I congratulate all of you, he said oilily. The next question comes from F. Clark of Des Moines, Iowa. Name five states, gentlemen, which have more than 20 electoral votes. I imagine a good many people are thinking of that now. Five states which have more than 20 electoral votes. Suppose we start with Mr. Adams.
New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois.
That gives us... Do you want to stop there, Mr. Adams?
Yeah, that's enough.
All right, Mr. Levant.
I'll throw in one. California.
Okay, very
Michigan.
Good.
Michigan. Pennsylvania.
Did you say Michigan?
I said Michigan.
Well, that's I'm afraid wrong. That sends $10 to Mr. Clark and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Why is he so hot-headed?
I don't know. He's very impetuous this evening. Michigan's wrong. There are two others. Mr. Brown?
Pennsylvania.
That was said.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, we said Pennsylvania.
Texas.
I know Pennsylvania would like to be counted twice, but it just can't be.
Texas?
Texas is right, Mr. Levant.
Well,
I wish you'd come
right
in
right
ahead of Mr. Adams. And there's one still remaining, Ohio. Mrs. R.S. Luttrell, that sends $10, by the way, to Mr. Clark and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
I was wrong because Michigan has supplanted Texas in the 40 census.
Are you you were wrong because of that?
Yes, I took the 1930.
That's demo day, Mr. Adams. That memory of yours. Nothing that's happened since 1930 interests you. Awfully sorry. Now, let's see. Up to this point, how have we done? The evening's going on so far have cost Canada Dry a total of $40 and four sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Canada Dry thanks you, Mr. Brown, for joining the party this evening. Next week, that trio of veterans, Adams, Levant, and Kieran, will be on hand. And our guest will be an old friend, the famous author, critic, essayist, the author of Kitty Foyle, Mr. Christopher Morley. Remember, send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
The art of gracious entertaining is an accomplishment that everyone desires. And I think the big secret in achieving this is by being at ease and making your guests feel the same way. Now, a club soda may seem a minor detail in accomplishing this end, but it will rise to major proportions when you find that the refreshments you serve taste flat and insipid. So when planning to entertain, be sure to include sparkling Canada Dry water. You'll find your guests know and appreciate the tangy flavor, the long-lasting goodness of this famous club soda. They associate it with the best of everything. Yes, though it may seem only a detail, club soda, sparkling Canada Dry water will go a long way in making your next entertaining successful.
I want to thank Mr. Brown again, and I want to thank Mr. Richard Watts if he's listening in, and I hope someday we'll have a chance to have Mr. Brown and Mr. Watts on the same program. Wouldn't you like that, Mr. Brown?
No, I'd rather send him a question.
All right, maybe we can arrange that.
Your neighborhood stores have Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water in convenient sizes for every occasion. The 12-ounce medium-sized bottle sells 3 for 25 cents, plus bottle deposit. And remember, too, you'll find Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water at clubs, restaurants, hotels, and wherever fine beverages are sold. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry. Until next week at this same time.